Hello and welcome back. This is going to be part two of two with Stephen Kotler. This is Techonomics and I'm Jason Middleton. Kotler's new book is called Last Tango in Cyberspace.
The speed of technological change is so fast, and I wanted to put all this stuff that I knew was going to show up over the next 5 years into a world so I could look at it and go, well, what the heck is coming?
The world created in Last Tango is based very closely on our world about 5 years out, and all the technology in the book either exists in labs or is rumored to exist. The title points to the end of the beginning of our relationship with the internet and the technologies that it's allowing and fomenting, etc. Okay, let's just jump back into this one. I find this ironic to the point of almost despair, because it sounds like computers are better at empathy and getting better at empathy than humans are because of technology, because of the filters and the warping that can happen with our technology and the way we consume data. This is divergent. This is a problem, I think.
Well, no, I mean, like, I'll give you another example. This is not in the book, but real life. So I am co-founder of a company called Equilibrium that tries to bring technologists together with environmentalists to solve big environmental challenges. And I stood on stage a couple years ago at one of our events with the guy who built Watson for IBM, the AI. And we said, hey, we think within 10, 15 years, we're going to have an AI as Secretary of the Interior in the United States, because you're going to need to make environmental decisions about the world without pressure from lobbyists, without pressure from special interest groups, if we're going to kind of tackle the environmental challenges that are ahead of us. And everybody went, oh, my God, that's crazy. 6 months later, an AI ran for mayor of a province in Japan and came very close to winning.
Oh, my God.
For the same reason, because they're unbiased.
Unbelievable. Okay, so let's get believable. Let's put some heat on the meat here. Let's go back to your book. Last Tango in Cyberspace is your newest one. I'd like to start with the title, actually. Let's unpack the title, because cyberspace, of course, is a very specific thing. Why did you choose that?
All my titles tend to do two things at once. It's just a thing I like to do. Last Tango in Cyberspace is the end of something radically new, right? In this case, specifically, I'm talking about the free sharing of information. Cyberspace was novelist William Gibson's term for kind of the mind space produced by the web, sort of what he called a shared consensual hallucination. But it's really like, if you think about the world pre-internet versus how it feels post-internet, it got a lot, we're smaller actually post-internet, right? Like, it was a lot bigger before the internet, and it was all that changed was there's a wire in your telephone line, but suddenly how big the universe, your universe felt changed, right? That's the shared consensual hallucination he means by cyberspace. And the title comes from the fact that, like, sharing information is useless if we can't trust what's being shared.
Right.
That's what's happening today, right? If it's fake news or control of content by big tech companies, we're getting filtered information. And that means our reality is filtered. And with the tech that's coming, this problem gets worse.
I think you're right. I think we're not prepared. But can we be prepared? Is there, at your institute, for instance, are there skill sets being shared and taught and researched to help us deal with this breakneck pace?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, you know, I work at the Flow Research Collective. We work on kind of peak performance and the use of states of consciousness, specifically flow, to improve performance. And we know flow is one of the few times that the brain can sort of multitask. It processes information more quickly, much higher quality, finds patterns that you can't normally find. So this is kind of one of the, and what that means in the real world, by the way, is things like creativity. When there's a lot of flow, creativity spikes mm-hmm. through the roof, motivation spikes through the roof, learning goes through the roof, performance goes through the roof. So it's one of the ways, probably the best way, and how we are biologically hardwired to do this, to deal with the massive rate of change in the world.
Let's talk about your characters. Let's talk about Lion. Let's give the listeners something to think about. How did you build this character for Lion?
Lion, it's interesting. Lion is a new kind of human. He's what I call an empathy tracker, an M tracker. He has a deeper, expanded sense of empathy than most people, much in the way that you see people who are on the spectrum can have incredibly high functioning math skills. Right, it's a trade off. He has a much, you know, it's a new version of people that has a much expanded view of empathy, and he actually can feel empathy out to the cultural level. So it allows him to track where culture is going, which turns out to be a fairly useful skill for certain kinds of companies, right? It's like a new future version of cool hunting. And he gets kind of embroiled, gets hired by a pharmaceutical company to kind of backtrack what appears to be a new kind of psychedelic that may have medical potential, and he ends up embroiled in a murder mystery turned global conspiracy turned a whole lot more.
Such a fun book. That was one of my favorite parts, is following that character specifically. And I think it's because it's such an original idea. Okay, there's a couple directions we could go here. Let's talk about artificial intelligence real quick, because we talk about empathy and computing power, artificial intelligence. I tell everybody, if you are in a job or a gig that is rules-based, then you are at risk of being automated out. Is that something that you address in this book?
I don't address the question of joblessness head on, and the reason is I have a slightly different opinion than a lot of people on this, so a lot of economists share my opinion, which is what we've seen is every time a technology goes exponential, an internet-sized opportunity is created, and we usually can't see them until they're upon us. We've got a ton of these technologies that are going exponential. So, yes, AI is definitely coming for our jobs. There's no right. Depends on whose numbers you want to go by, but, you know, over the next 10 years, I think it's 10% of American jobs are at risk. 66 million people are going to have to be retooled and retrained to keep pace. But you also have to understand, with virtual reality, which is suddenly going exponential as well, first of all, whole new economies will be popping up inside of VR, just like they popped up inside the internet. And also, this is work that the collective is sort of poking at, my company is sort of poking at. Virtual reality can be used to accelerate, very, very massively accelerate retraining. So it's not, I mean, yes, okay. we are moving through a shift, but it's also going to bring a ton of jobs, and our ability to retrain people is going to accelerate as well. I don't mean there isn't tons of people coming our way. There is, of course. Right. I just don't think it's the disaster that everybody is looking at. But again, I'm just one dude.
Right. Well, yeah,
right, with it a bit yet.
Can I call this cyberpunk?
Yeah, you know, so one of the other reasons is cyberpunk I loved as a genre. Like, William Gibson was the first author. I learned a very important lesson that shaped my entire career, which is, oh my God, you can present really big ideas in a page-turning thriller. I can't wait to see what happens. Stay up all night, kind of next. Yeah. At the same time, and that's, I hadn't seen that before, right? Like, big idea books before William Gibson came along were slow reading. They were lugubrious. You had to kind of fight your way through them, nonfiction or fiction alike. With Gibson, I was suddenly like, holy crap, you can make this page turning exciting for people and still communicate. And so that was really important to me. I think everybody's busy. If you're going to give me 6-7 hours, I want to blow your mind, but I also want to entertain you.
Right.
I really do. So from Gibson, I learned that, and cyberpunk was the genre he did it in, and it's a cool genre. It's sort of like near future science fiction.
Right.
So I got to create a world that I knew was coming and look at it, and it's sort of noir detective fiction in the middle, which allows you to kind of move the plot along really quickly. It allows you to do fun things with language, at least for me as a writer. And so there's a lot more humor in the book than you can kind of wedge into kind of nonfiction and stuff like that. So I thought it was really fun. But yeah, I think it probably is cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk is kind of counterculture in a way, and I think that's a little bit of a theme in here too, is there's a bit of a counterculture thing. And I was prepping for this interview with you, and I fell into the Michael Pollan piece about him experimenting with psilocybin and an underground Sherpa, if you will. And I was wondering,
yep.
We've talked about this before. Has there been any progression in the last 18 months since we last spoke when it comes to the acceptance and research around psychedelia?
I think it's a monster, in all honesty. Like, first of all, the research is progressing apace. The most incredible thing, I think, is, you know, MDMA for the treatment of PTSD in soldiers, which is where we started 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It has gotten to the point that, like, the FDA is literally rushing MDMA through phase 3 trials and with emergency medical status because it works so well and so many soldiers are suffering. But to boot, they're also rushing through trials for anxiety and depression because it's working so well. Anxiety and depression, this is 1 out of 10 Americans
mm-hmm.
who are on medication for these diseases. So, and it's moving. I mean, we're talking next couple of years. So, yes, the research is expanding really, really quickly into kind of the potential for all altered states of consciousness, psychedelics being one of them, meditation, my own work on flow. We're learning, and this is sort of the point I think we made in Stealing Fire. It's also a point I make in Last Tango, I believe, that the skills that are critical for survival and thriving in the 21st century are not skills, right? Creativity, cooperation, collaboration, all the things innovation that we really need to thrive in the century, what everybody tells us we need. how evolution shaped our brain to do that those things is by shifting states of consciousness. That's how we do it. They're not skill sets. They're states of mind. That's how we amplify that stuff. We haven't really known that before. Now we know it, and we're starting to get a handle on the neurobiology underneath it, which gives us mechanism.
This is a great book. Stephen Kotler, you are at the top of your game and on the top of a very fascinating segment and intersection of modern life. The newest book, Last Tango in Cyberspace, by Stephen Kotler. Go get it. Stephen, thanks so much for your time.
Jason, totally appreciate talking to you.
That was Stephen Kotler, author of the new book, Last Tango in Cyberspace. The fictional but all too real book explores hot topics like psychology, neuroscience, technology, and ecological and animal rights issues. For links to the book, and it's worth every click and page turn, please check the podcast notes wherever you pull down your audio sweetness, or check the show notes that live online at kgoradio.com. Coming up after the break, we talk with Clive Thompson. He's of Wired Magazine. We just had some science fiction with Mr. Kotler, but Mr. Thompson's new book is about real people doing real computer programming and those coding pitfalls that come with it.
Great example. A while ago, someone was working on training a automatically recommend jobs to job candidates, right? So they take all this past data of who got what job. And what they discover is that when they train this AI, it's recommending higher paying jobs to men and lower paying jobs to women. Because, of course, that's the pattern it learned from the past.
That's next. So do please stick around. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.